All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here. Nice May 8th. Tim, how was your night? I had some news, actually. We'll save it. I want to know how your night went.
My night was good. Yeah, my night was good. I watched some hockey.
Big lottery happened last night. A couple hockey games. Were you just glued to the TV?
Yeah, it's messing with my sleep schedule, though, because it's like I don't even want to be watching hockey every single night because I try to go to bed early as often as I can. And then they go to overtime, and you're like, you're not going to turn it off. And just, it's great, though. It's a good problem to have.
What happened to you last overtime? Night? I felt the same way. I was up watching hockey, just crazy stuff. But we got the big chicken delivery.
Oh, okay.
We went from 2 to 10. So we're a serious farm now.
Wow.
Yeah, we got some chickens. The coop is 88% done. I have to do the finishing trim. And I got to do some minor things, but it's like the chickens are in there. Like it's, we legit have a farm right now.
Have the girls already named them all?
They've named 7 of them because there's 7 kids and we're leaving 3 just unnamed. I think they named them like
chicken number one,
three musketeers or something as a group. So the 3 outliers are being shunned already by the others that have names.
They're going to know that and they're not going to give you eggs.
What's funny is that the 2 that we've had, we've let them free range around our property. So they have full use of the 30 acres. I didn't want that anymore because those 2 chickens just dump all over my driveway. I don't know if you've seen chicken poop. Disgusting. And so I said, 10 chickens all over my driveway. It's going to be just a minefield to try to get out. And the kids could care less. They're tracking in poop all the time. So I went out and got a bunch of fence, 100 some feet worth, and I enclosed them. So they have a very nice big area, but the 2 chickens that are used to roaming, they don't like it. They don't like it one bit. They don't go near the 8 new chickens. They sit in the corner, not the corner because it's a big circle. They sit in one area and they just look through the fence and they're upset because they're used to just cruising around. They have their rotation where I let them out in the morning, and Tim, they must walk 15 miles a day because they go around the whole property and we see them every once in a while, but it's going to affect them the most.
Are they all hens this time?
10 hens. Yeah. No roosters. Yeah. I might go pick up a rooster just to keep order with the hens because there is a pecking order when it comes to chickens. And I'm worried that the 8 new ones will gang up on the 2 original ones, the OGs, because the 2 original ones are big. They're bigger than the 8 new ones because they've been eating good. They've been going around getting bugs and worms all over the property. You know, life's been good. So I don't know how that's going to pan out. We'll see. We didn't let them sleep in the same coop last night. We still let the 2 OGs stay in the car. What's they like? So we'll see how it goes. But the kids already this morning, like, gosh, Dad, those chickens poop a lot. It's all over the floor already. Like, that is your job. This is your thing. I built this coop for you guys. You clean the poop. You get the eggs. You sell the eggs. This is all you guys. So it's going to be a learning curve for them.
Yeah, it's great. Must have been pretty exciting when the chickens pulled in.
It was exciting. Yeah. And I was just on my way out because we did another Bleacher Report thing last night, Tim. Were you there for that?
I was. Yep.
Yeah. So I was on my way out. The taping started at 6:30. And I was like, crap, the chickens came at like 6:10 or 6:05. And I'm like, I'm going to miss this taping. But I got there just in the nick of time. Tim was sweating bullets. He thought he was going to have to do it on his own. Nervous. Nah, but anyways, enough about me. Let's talk about Bet365, because this episode is brought to you by Bet365. They're the proud partner of Dropping the Gloves. You can open an account with Bet365 today and bet on a huge range of markets. So much fun stuff there. Go check it out. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, playoffs, regular season, anything, it doesn't matter. It's never ordinary at Bet365. Use code HOCKEYCA. Check it out. It's not just available in Canada. That's just a code, HOCKEYCA. Go to Bet365. Have some fun. Win some money. Pretty much just do what Tim says. Because you think his main source of income is Dropping the Gloves podcast? It's Bet365. The guy is just a stone cold gambling killer. He kills it every single time with bets. Every single time he bets. All right, moving on. There were some fun games last night. Speaking of hockey, speaking of overtime, speaking of staying up late, the reason we stayed up late, two overtime games last night. Two games, two overtimes. Western Conference games finally got underway. Dallas, Colorado. Friends of the show, Joe Pavelski, Matt Duchene. Into the second round, got by the Nashville Predators. Oh, sorry, not by the Nashville Predators. The Dallas Stars. Who'd they beat in the first round?
Nashville.
Right? It was Nashville. Yeah. I was second guessing myself. I should always go with
Nashville.
Nashville
is Vancouver. Why am I blanking? It's hard thinking in the moment.
I know. Dallas. I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, come back to me. Let's circle back.
But they played the Colorado Avalanche, who in the regular season they did very well against. But going into this series, I would say even though Dallas beat the Vegas Golden Knights in Game 7, that's so embarrassing for us. Even though Dallas, you know, won the Western Conference, 1 point behind the New York Rangers for the President's Trophy, I would say vastly they were the underdog going into this series. Colorado played very well down the stretch. They played very round in their first round series. Who did Colorado play in the first round?
Winnipeg.
Beat the Winnipeg Jets. But you got to play the game. You got to drop the puck. So the game one was held in Dallas Stars Stadium, and Dallas Stars came out just on fire, carrying over from Game 7 win over the Vegas Golden Knights a few days earlier, and they jumped out to a 3-0 lead. What did you think early, Tim, after the first period?
Yeah, because I was paying more attention at that point to the other game. And so 3-0 early, I saw that Ryan Suter scored. I saw that Wyatt Johnson scored yet again. I said 3-0 in the first. I know this is a good team, but so is Dallas. This game looked like it was over. And then, you know, circle back a little while later and spoke too soon.
Yeah, you have a feeling the way the game, the flow of the games go. First goal, nothing Georgiev could do. Ryan Suter shot from the point. Great play by Matt Duchene, by the way. Coming out of the corner, cross-ice pass to the defenseman. Kind of a seeing-eye puck back in the net. Second goal, it's a 5-on-3 goal. Or was it third goal, a 5-on-3 goal, excuse me. And then the second goal, Wyatt Johnson shot, slightly tipped by Cale Makar. I saw the 3-0 score, like you said. I wasn't watching that game. I was paying attention to Carolina and New York. But I thought, oh, Georgiev sucks. You know, he's laying an egg again. This is all his fault. I don't think any of the goals were his fault. I feel like it was just one of those situations where off Ben's stick, off his glove in the net, seeing eye puck from Suter, Wyatt Johnson goes off Cale Makar. None his fault. Did you think he should have saved any of those? Maybe the second one?
No, I kind of came into this morning. I watched all the highlights again, prepared to be like, okay, Georgiev is a problem. They can't win 1-0, whatever. But I don't really blame him for any of those either. I think maybe like, because there was a similar play last night where D'Angelo had a very, almost in overtime, the same shot that Ryan Suter had from the point, and Shesterkin sees through the crowd and makes a save.
Yeah.
So maybe like the best of the best make it, but it's not necessarily his fault that he didn't see that one. Wyatt Johnson, quick rip off the faceoff. The other one was 5-on-3. So I don't really blame him for any of those.
And then the second period begins, and then you can start to feel the momentum shift. Colorado finds their feet, they get their footing, and then they get a power play, and they score a goal. Then they get another power play, and they score another goal. And then the ice is totally tilted towards the Dallas Stars end. It's just shift after shift, shot after shot. Ottinger's playing great. Finally, they tie the game to end the second period, and it's like, whoa, that did not take long. The Colorado Avalanche, when they want to click it into gear, Tim, they're a dangerous team. And it got me thinking, well, we'll touch on the power play in a little bit. Is there a better five-man unit, 5-on-5, than what the Avalanche throw out there? Rantanen, McKinnon, Nichushkin, Makar, and Taves. They are so in sync. They are so intertwined. Everybody knows what everybody else is doing and interchangeable. Cale Makar's behind the net. He's leading the rush. Devin Toews is not shy anymore. He's, you know, just as aggressive as Makar at times. All those guys are so incredibly skilled through the neutral zone into the offensive zone. They take risks, but they're calculated. And when they get into the offensive zone, it's amazing. It's like the Sedin brothers when I used to play against them. They know where they're going. They know where they will be. They know how to pass. They just, the anticipation is incredible. And these guys are better than the Sedins. Is there a better five-man unit out there? Maybe Edmonton's.
Maybe Edmonton. I would even probably throw Tampa out there with Kucherov, Points, Stamkos, those guys. But yeah, you miss who's not even healthy, Landeskog.
Yeah.
Who's in that top five too. Maybe who does he boost out? Maybe Toews or Nichushkin. But like, yeah. And it's not just the individual talent, like you said. It's just the way they anticipate each other and see the ice together as a unit. Like those old Russian teams. It was a five-man unit. It wasn't five players. So that's what they're capable of doing in any shift and any night.
No, that's a really good comparison because when they wind it up behind the net, when they clear that D zone, it's a fire sale. They're racing up the ice and they do it at such a fast speed and all the passes are on the tape. It's fun to watch, but let's get back to the power play. This is the reason why Colorado got back into the game. Dallas started taking some penalties and the Avalanche just took advantage right away. The power play for this team, and much like the 5-on-5 with those five guys, because it's the same guys in the power play, they're dominant. They beat you so many different ways. You see the, you know, crowding the crease, go from low to high, or high to low, excuse me, when you're guarding Makar. They throw it down to McKinnon, throw it down to Nichushkin. They're attacking the net. They're getting goals every different way. You saw Makar's goal from the point. You give him a lane, he's going to pick a corner. You take away Makar, they're going down low. Rantanen out to Nichushkin, who's the biggest body I've ever seen down there. He taps in a rebound. It's one of the most dangerous power plays that I've seen, and they get two power play goals really early, Nichushkin and McKinnon. Makar and Nichushkin. And you notice a theme here with these games and these teams. One team jumps ahead, another team crawls back via the power play. And we've said it in years past. If you have a solid power play, which you need in the playoffs, because a lot of the times the 5-on-5 gets negated, you're looking pretty good. And the teams that are really Stanley Cup viable contenders right now all have legit power plays. The Avalanche can throw out a lethal unit. The New York Rangers, we'll talk about in a second, are probably the best five-man unit we have in the NHL to date. Tim thinks the Edmonton Oilers are. All those three teams are lights out. The teams that are struggling, the teams that are already eliminated, power play sucked. Carolina Hurricanes haven't scored on the power play in the first two games of round two. Toronto Maple Leafs, terrible power play. The Winnipeg Jets, terrible power play. All the teams who got eliminated or who are in trouble right now, their power plays are struggling. The teams that are doing good, power plays are so incredible. It's so important when you get those opportunities because they are slim in the playoffs. They can become less and less frequent. You need to convert. You saw with the Rangers in game one. Two opportunities, two goals. All right, back to the Colorado-Dallas series. Let's get to overtime. Colorado ties it up. They play clear-cut third period. Nothing really happens. We go to overtime 3-3 score. Dallas takes it to him for the first 5 minutes of this overtime series. Overtime. It's just chance after chance after chance. What did you think of Georgie's save on Tyler Seguin from a pass from Joe Pavelski?
Yeah, incredible. That was like a cup-winning save. You know, where you see those guys that just rise to the moment, and Seguin knew he had it, and Georgiev reaches back behind him in the back door and makes a save. And so if you want to be critical of him for some of the earlier saves, you got to give him credit for that one. And then I don't know. I have to watch again. I don't remember if it was at the end of a shift or anything. But how does Heiskanen get beat like that on that overtime goal?
Miles Wood just kicked on the afterburners.
I know, but Heiskanen's a top, what, five skater in the NHL? Yeah. And so maybe he was gassed. I know it was overtime, but it was overtime for Wood too. So yeah, break down that play for me.
Great play by Andrew Cogliano coming from the D zone, aware that Miles Wood is just breaking. And this is where I think Miles Wood gets a step on Heiskanen because Wood is just going like a bat out of hell right away. There must have been a play already drawn up or Cogliano gave him some signal because as soon as Cogliano goes to retrieve the puck on the half boards, Wood's gone. He's already blowing the zone and Heiskanen's a step behind him and you can see it. He's shifting from reverse to forward. He's trying to transition and pivot, and Wood has already passed him. And by that time, you can't catch up to him. Heiskanen is a very good skater, and Wood uses his big body to cut inside Miro Heiskanen, goes east to west on Ottinger and it's game over. It was Miles Wood. He looked like McKinnon flying down the ice. He really did. Wood is 94, I want to say, and McKinnon's 96. So very similar number. Weird numbers in Colorado.
29. Ranton is 96.
Weird numbers still. A lot of 90s, a lot of strange numbers. But yeah, great goal by Miles Wood. But the play is made by Andrew Cogliano. Coming from the D zone on his backhand, doesn't really see Miles Wood, more feels him, and just throws it to a space. And Miles Wood fills that space, picks up the puck, and he's gone. And people forget how good Miles Wood was. He was great in New Jersey. Very good player, you know, solid two-way guy, physical, could fight a little bit. Underrated signing coming to Colorado last year. Signs like a six-year deal. I think it was $2.5 million, started last year. Good player, third-line guy. I like him.
So obviously a pretty frustrating night for Dallas, going up 3-0, losing at home to start the series off. Are you encouraged at all for them, or maybe a little bit frustrated at all for Colorado? The fact they haven't won a close, low-scoring game yet. All of Colorado's wins have been 4, 5, 6 goals. And sometimes they let up one, sometimes they let up 4 or 5, but they haven't been able to win a tight 1-0 game yet. Is that an area for concern for you?
I think the key there is they're winning.
Yeah.
They haven't lost a low scoring game. So if, you know, their offense is good enough to make up for their lack of defensive potency, so to speak. So maybe in you know, round three, but they're going to play a high offense in round three, whether it's Edmonton or Vancouver. I don't feel like there's a really good defensive system team. It's Dallas in the Western Conference. They would be the one team who could shut down the Avalanche. And they're not doing it. So if I'm the Dallas Stars, I'm very worried. You jump out to a 3-0 lead, you're at home, everything's going great, and you just let it slip away. So Colorado played a terrible first period, all intents and purposes. And they blow out the Dallas Stars the last three periods of the game, and now we're off to game two. Dallas is already behind the eight ball. But don't give up on the Dallas Stars yet. They lost the first two games to the Vegas Golden Knights last round. They came storming back and won the next three. So this is fine for them. They still put up three in the first period. So they have something to kind of hang their hat on, too. They could say, you know what? We had a bunch of chances in overtime. That first 5 minutes, Seguin could have scored twice. We were all over him. Wyatt Johnson had a chance right on the doorstep, didn't elevate the puck enough. They're right there, too. This could easily be a 1-0, you know, series lead for the Dallas Stars. So both teams coming out of this with things to work on. Both teams coming out of this with positives. Maybe don't take so many penalties, Dallas Stars. There's a lot that will change. The first game is always a feeling out process. These guys will correct some things. But yeah, man, I think if I'm Colorado, I'm feeling pretty good. That five-man unit, Tim, I can't get over it. Every time I watch them, and I watch these guys quite a bit, I'm just still blown away at how good they are. Nechuski.
Yeah, and... The comeback came through Makar because he scored the goal. But obviously, the two assists, he didn't just make the pass. He created the play in one of them out of nothing. Like, he's just, when he's on, there's no match for that. And we showed not even Heiskanen is close to Makar right now. So it's pretty special.
And sometimes when you're good, it's nice to be lucky. On the power play goal, Wyatt Johnson breaks his stick.
Yeah.
And Makar goes to make a pass and he fluffs it and it just goes by Wyatt Johnson skates. And because he doesn't have a stick, he's vulnerable. He can't do anything. Makar picks it up, shoots it, and Nechuskin pumps in the rebound. So it's just like, gosh, you're already a world-class talent and you get the breaks like that. It just should not be fair. And these sticks these days, what are we doing here? We got to get a stick manufacturer in here because they just like explode in a face-off.
Yeah,
give me an old Sherwood PMP 7700. That's what I want. I played with that thing for like 5 years. Didn't break. Unbelievable. Just the durability, the strength. And you know me. I was whacking and hacking. I set records at Michigan Tech for minor penalties. You look at my penalties when I played at Michigan Tech, you'd think I was picking up 10-minute minors all the time. Nah, all 10-minute majors, excuse me. Like I would rack up 120 penalty minutes, 140 penalty minutes in a season. We only played 30-some games. All minors. Averaging
2 minors a game.
Oh, 3. 2 or 3 a game. All minors. I was just awful. Awful to play against in college. Michigan Tech right here. That's why. All right, let's move on to the other game that went to overtime. Double overtime. Carolina, New York Rangers. Crucial game for the Hurricanes. You don't want to go down 2-0 to the New York Rangers. Lo and behold, they did. Vinny Trocheck scores the game-winning overtime goal. What did you think of this game, Tim? Your hometown team not looking good.
Yeah, it was disappointing in the result. I'm not rooting for one team or another, but I want this series to go seven. And the fact that New York Rangers took both games on the road to start this. Oh, no, they were home, right?
Rangers were at home, yep.
Yeah, but still I was hoping Carolina would tie it up. A couple major takeaways for me watching this game. Lafreniere, two goals in the first, looked really good. Both of them, one of them where he elevated the rebound over, he's patient, right over Anderson's shoulder. Yeah, that was good. And then Sebastian Aho, just the playmaking ability. I think he had three assists last night, but two of them I had to watch a couple of times to even see what happened. Just like quick look over the shoulder and then just turn and whip it across the ice, and it's right there for a backdoor by Gensel. Just incredible play. But obviously, we'll get into the overtime and the result pretty soon.
Not good enough. Great game by Jake Gensel. I feel like he's been somewhat quiet throughout these playoffs. Yeah. I think he stepped up. A lot of good things happened for Carolina. Outshot the team, outchanced the team. When you look at the analytics, I got it from naturalstattrick.com or whatever it is. High danger chances, scoring chances, expected goals, Corsi, Fenwick shots, everything you can imagine. Hurricane should have won that game. They outplayed the New York Rangers. They had more chances. They had more zone time. They had more everything you want out of a team. The Hurricanes did it. You know what they didn't have? Igor Shesterkin. He's incredible. People thought he was, you know, not done this season, but maybe he was coming down to earth a little bit with his play. His numbers were down. He wasn't playing that great, letting in some uncharacteristic goals. He's back. He played fantastic, too. He played so good. And the biggest moment when he needed to step up at the end of the third period, it's a tie game. The Rangers are on the power play. They're trying to, you know, score. Carolina Hurricanes get a 2-on-1. Chatfield and Jarvis. Backdoor to Jarvis. Fantastic save. 1 minute left. Like, just such a critical moment. He saves that. Still in the zone. Chatfield again on the doorstep. Comes across with a nice backhand. Shesterkin. And he makes it look so effortless. That's the frustrating part for shooters. You know, you want to see the goalie diving. You want to see him getting a toe on it. You want to see him stretching. You want to have that hope that the shot's going in. Shesterkin's just there. He's so fast. He can anticipate shots. His reactions times are through the roof. His hand eye is incredible. It's not, he's never at a position. You understand what I'm saying? You know, how goalies are flopping and diving and this and that. Like Gorgiev on that save on Sagan. Shesterkin would have just been there. It would have hit him in the chest. He's just good. It's frustrating. Henrik Lundqvist was the same way. Positionally, anticipationally, if that's a word. He was world class. It's hard to quantify how hard it is for a shooter when the goalie's just like he's there. You expect him to not be there, but he's there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was a little bit, not to make it about the Bruins, but I will for a second. When you went from the Timmy Thomas to Tuukka, and Tuukka's not making those like backdoor flailing saves, just acrobatic, desperate moves that Timmy was.
Yeah.
But Tuukka was so technically sound and perfect in that way where he just anticipated better. He was bigger. He just read the play a little bit better. He didn't have to do those extra moves to do it. Not saying one's better than the other. It's just two different goaltending styles. But it looked like he was too relaxed, didn't care, didn't have the same passion that Timmy had. But he was just so well read at reading the play and adapting and doing it ahead of time. Like you said, he's turning before the pass goes across and it's hitting him in the chest, where Timmy's, you know, reaching his arm out and doing something beautiful that makes a highlight reel. Two different goaltending styles, and I think Shesterkin had 54 saves last night.
Incredible.
Which is just crazy. How do you beat that?
You don't. You have to continue to throw pucks at the net, and hopefully you can get some by him. All the goals they got were tips. They were redirections. There was stuff of that ilk. So you have to just get traffic, get tips, get greasy goals. You're not going to beat him clean. It won't happen. He is just too incredibly good. Gosh, is he good? And you know what else is good? The Rangers power play. They are lights out. Game one, they go for 2 for 2. It took them 8 seconds, I think, to score their both goals. This game, it said they had 7 power plays. Really, they only had 5. One power play was 4 seconds, 5 seconds. They took a penalty right away. The other one was the same thing where it was really truncated. They get 5 power plays. They score 2. Overall in the series, that's 4 for 7. That's pretty good. And if you're expected to win, if you're the Carolina Hurricanes, who is a damn good 5-on-5 team, the Carolina Hurricanes. Very, very good. The one thing coming into this series, and I'm sure Brendan Moore harped on it, I'm sure all the players talk about it in the locker room, what can't we do? We cannot take penalties versus this team. That's the only way they're going to beat us. And what do? We just take a ton of penalties. Third period, we take three penalties. We're up. We have the lead, 3-2. And we just give them opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. And they take advantage of it. And we go to overtime, and Vincent Trocheck scores the game winner. But a lot of people, Tim, are talking about my friend Jacob Trouba. Love this guy. I love him.
Yeah.
I think he is everything you want in a defenseman. And he just did what Jacob Trouba does in the playoffs. He just took a run at somebody. And that somebody was Martin Nikas. And Martin made a career move, a business decision, and he bailed out, much like Dion Phaneuf did when I caught him coming through the middle ice, wasn't expecting, and I could have just murdered him. And he bailed out, that little pansy. And so did Martin Nikas. He bails out in probably the worst possible situation, 2 feet from the boards. And Jacob Trouba had a decision to make, Tim. He's like, do I just kind of fall? I see him bailing out. Or do I try to take this son of a gun's head off for bailing out? And he chose violence, my friends. He tried to kill Martin Nikas, and he just missed. He just missed. And if he connects with the people's elbow, he gets 5 games. And Martin Nikas is potentially out for life. That was an aggressive run that he took. What did you think of it? Did you close your eyes, Tim? Was it too violent?
I peeked through my fingers to watch it. It was a stupid hit. Like, I know it's fun and cool and hockey's great with the big hits and you want that in the playoffs. That was a stupid one for me. Like, and he could have hurt himself too, Trouba, by the way. Like, if you don't get your hands up, like, he went into the board like a missile. Like, the way you described Patrick Kaleta, except I don't know if Kaleta jumped like that too, but like, just straight perpendicular to the ground, into the boards, and he had his arms up, luckily, to absorb most of the blow. But he could have really hurt himself. But then again, he could have really hurt Nietzsche's too. And so the way you describe it, you don't think his elbow would have came up if Nietzsche's hadn't ducked down? But that was a reactionary to...
It's reactionary and maybe a little perturbed. But yeah, if he hits him, his elbow, his shoulder's in, his elbow's in. You've seen him hit dozens and dozens of times. His elbow never comes up. That happens when he has to brace himself for the boards and he's getting ready to just protect himself. Yeah, if he's... He's hitting him. It's shoulder to shoulder. The guy's a stud. And I love this because guess what? Guess who's not going to want to go over the blue line anymore? Who's maybe going to think twice? Maybe I'm just going to dump it in. Maybe I don't want to cut across the middle. Is he on the ice? Is he around? I better check. The second you stop thinking about attacking the net, and start wondering who's on the ice, we got you. And that's what's going to happen. He is a game changer, even if he doesn't do anything. That play right there will have rippling effects over this series. I'm telling you, it does. Guys are a little nervous crossing that blue line now, if you know Jacob Trouba's on the ice.
Yeah, there's going to be a play at some point in the next few games where we're going to break down why the play failed for Carolina, and you can point to Trouba being on the ice and be like, oh, this guy didn't chase as hard, or he bailed out on a play, or he backdropped a pass because they didn't want to skate through it. And yeah, and you'd be like, okay, Trouba's in their head. That's what he does. Yeah. And he's tall too, which he's got going for him. So
I love that. And he's the captain. The Rangers know how to do it. You know, they could have gave it to Panarin. He's not tall enough. Give it to Trouba. Here's a question. Will the Rangers ever lose? They're 6-0 now. Swept the Capitals. They're walking through the Hurricanes. Not walking through. Are they going to lose, Tim, this round?
Someone texted me last night and said, who would you rather play if you're the Bruins in the next round, Carolina or New York? And I said New York. It was before game two. So, you know, it was still 1-0 at that point. I still think Carolina has Boston's number better than New York does. I feel like New York has a higher ceiling but a lower floor in terms of what there could be big swings, similar to maybe in Edmonton. But right now, it doesn't look like anything's getting by them. You know, like when you have a goalie playing like he is and you have that offense firing at the power play firing, you can win games 4-3, 4-2, you know, and just be able to count on your guys to get it done. And like, you still haven't seen the best from Panarin. Or Zibanejad's been playing well. You've got Lafreniere stepping up. So, yeah, to answer your question, they look pretty unbeatable right now.
Wow. So you're thinking they're going to run the table 16-0?
No. No. But it looks like they're getting by Carolina. So, but the series technically hasn't started yet. So
true. And speaking of the Boston Bruins, they had their game one the other night, and they played the Florida Panthers, and Tim was all down. Oh, they're going to lose. The Florida Panthers are so good. We have no chance. What are we going to do? This and that and the other. Don't look now. The Boston Bruins showed up and just mopped the floor with the Florida Panthers, beating them 5-1 in the first game. So I don't know if you're playing the backwards game and just trying to lull us all to sleep. Oh, we have no chance. We have no chance. Next thing you know, Geeky scoring, Brazos scoring, DeBrus scores, Lowry and Carlo. Pretty much the second supporting cast for the Boston Bruins just took the Florida Panthers behind the woodshed and showed them what's what. Everybody thought Pasternak and Marchand and Zacha and Coyle were going to be the guys that need to step up. No, it's a third line. It's the fourth line. That Brazo is a big, big son of a gun, isn't he? And he's getting confident, Tim. I enjoy watching him lug the puck up the ice, and he's got some hands on him.
Yeah, and he went undrafted, which is crazy. He's like a big 6'4 guy that can skate like that, that's got hands like that. Yeah, it was a great game. 5-1. This is the same score as game one versus Toronto. So I think by no means are we saying that this is the Bruins have arrived and they're going to stomp Florida, and we're ready to say that they're, you know, going to get payback for last year. Because we know they're still capable of giving us a game where everything sucks and I want to die, and they just, I have no faith in them. But you have to give them credit for it. And what's cool is that Brandon Carlo, I don't know if you heard this story, his daughter or son was born.
Yeah, that day.
That morning. And they flew him a private jet, and he got back like an hour or a half before puck drop or whatever. Then he goes out and scores a goal. And right away, Pasternak picks up the puck to save for him so he can give it to his son someday. It's a pretty cool moment there. Mason Lowry is... He's breaking out in real time. The confidence that he has, and he did it in game 7 too, just like skating his way out of trouble in his own zone, taking risks, jumping up in the rush. That goal that he had, well, he pinched on a loose puck, which is just, you know, it's really cool to see a guy taking advantage like that. And it's, of course, the story is still Swayman.
Yeah.
You know, 5-1, so one goal allowed. He's now gone 7 consecutive games of allowing 2 goals or fewer since the start of the playoffs. Third best in NHL history. The best is 9. Like, he's within reach of that, and which is crazy. You give yourself, you give your team a chance to win every single night. Like, if you lose 1-0, 2-0, that's on them, because you're giving them a chance to compete every single night. And so I think of, if Boston is stepping out, if game 7 was a turning point for them and they continue on this and Swayman keeps playing the way he is, they're pretty dangerous. Similar but different to the Rangers. When you have a goalie playing like that, How do you beat them, you know?
38 saves.
Yeah.
39 shots. Florida did what Florida does. They threw everything at the net. They drove the net. They had traffic. Jeremy Swayman, real time, is turning into the best goaltender on the planet. Serious. I'm not even exaggerating that. And this is a large sample size, you guys. He has played now 6 games in the NHL playoffs. Seven. 6 versus the Toronto Maple Leafs, and now 1 versus the Florida Panthers. He has not let up a bad goal. He has not looked out of place. Every single game, he's been lights out. And Tim just said it there. He has not given up more than 2 goals in a single game. Incredible.
I think the only time he's even been beaten cleanly is that Nylander breakaway in game, 6? And even that was like kind of an asterisk. It was an unusual play because they were trying desperately to tie it, and everyone pinched up. Everything else has been off his own defenseman, weird bounces through the back door, weird rebounds. He has not been beaten cleanly, like you said. So it's pretty great to watch.
And the very scary thing about this, and it pains me to say this, the Bruins, who I always thought were top heavy, this and that, Brad Marchand has not played. He had 3 good games to play the Toronto Maple Leafs. The first 3 games, he played great. 8 points, goals and assists. He was playing fantastic. He's been very quiet the last 4 games, 5 games now. He's done relatively nothing. We saw, you know, what's his face scores the game winner, Pasta, for the Bruins. He was quiet this past game. If they can continue the secondary scoring and these guys are getting confident, you mentioned Lowry. I like Weatherspoon. He's been playing really good hockey too.
He's great
on the blue line with the puck, the poise, the confidence, the fearlessness. It's very impressive to watch. These Bruins, Tim, I might be sipping on that Kool-Aid a little bit.
The main thing that still makes me nervous is McAvoy's not right. He's not playing his best. I don't know if he's injured or what. He's just not, we're not seeing the best out of him. And then the centers, the top 6 centers, Coyle and Zacha. Cuoto's playing better than Zaka, but neither of them are playing very well. Neither of them have played that great throughout the whole playoffs so far. And we know the strength down the middle is the key to this, and you're not really getting that from those guys. You're getting it from the depth players and big moments from big players, but the top six in general has to be better.
They have
And I'm looking at those two in particular, so we'll see.
There has been reports that Patrice Bergeron has called, and he wants to play, only if they go up 3-0, and then he'll maybe get on the ice.
After game seven, I did get a few tweets and texts about, is John going to say Bergeron? If he came back, Bergeron, the Bruins would have lost, or something like that.
100%. Look what Austin Matthews did for Toronto.
Yeah.
They lose because he played, and he's going to have to live with that for the rest of his life. The reason they lost game seven was because of him. The selfishness is never ending on some of these guys. All right, moving on. A series that has not started yet. Finally going to kick the tires on this one. Edmonton, Vancouver, all the way out west. Game one. Some updates on the goaltending situation for the Vancouver Canucks. Thatcher Demko, thought to be out for the whole entire playoffs, is miraculously healing. He's now prognosticated to potentially play in this round. He's out until at least game four, but if it goes to 5, 6, 7, the door is slightly open for him to return, which could be huge for the Vancouver Canucks. This guy's good. This guy's very good. Silvas is a good story, playing solid. If you want to win the Stanley Cup, Thatcher Demko is your guy. But let's get into the series a little bit. We'll break it down. This episode's going a little long. We're already at 35 minutes. We gotta speed it up a little bit, Tim. What are you looking forward to in this series? Obviously, there's a lot of high-end players. Give me one.
Yeah, I mean, the obvious ones, McDavid, JT Miller, Draisaitl, and both Quinn Hughes, you know. I really like the point you made the other day about just the Vancouver's defense. Because if you look at some of the advanced stats, and obviously Vancouver was 4-0 against Edmonton this season. And so what you're talking about, just those guys, will they get exposed by the speed and the skill of the Oilers, or will they be able to handle it? And then even Zadorov, right? He's a guy that you look at and say, okay, he's going to be key to locking down. He's going to get a lot of minutes against those top two lines. And then there's a clip floating around of him trying to line McDavid up for a hit. McDavid, just in the regular season, McDavid shrugs it off, goes in and scores. So they kind of have the ammunition going both ways. So I'm thinking about Vancouver's defense, and I'm thinking about, you know, Quinn Hughes, I would even say. How much of the workload is he going to be able to shoulder? Because you know, it's like it's him and then it's everyone else on their back end.
Yeah.
And he's very good defensively because he's so smart, because he's so fast. He's not going to knock you off the puck with his body and his frame. And he's probably maybe one of two, three defensemen in the league that could keep pace with McDavid on a rush. So I think watching him match up against McDavid and Draisaitl every night will be pretty cool too.
Yeah, I think I'm looking at the depth for the Edmonton Oilers. We all know Draisaitl, McDavid, the Nuge, Hyman, they're going to get what they're going to get. They're going to get multiple points per game, but they're not playing the LA Kings. Canucks are a very deep team. They can roll out three lines that can legit put pucks in the net. And their fourth line isn't too, you know, bad itself with Lafferty and Bluger and just DiGiuseppe. Love that name. So what are we going to get from the bottom two for the Edmonton Oilers? In the first round, they were invisible. Corey Perry, Ryan McLeod, did not even a single point against the Kings. Henrique, your big acquisition, he had just, I think, one goal. Fogel, Carrick, all those guys, they need to pick it up. I don't want to say if you have any chance, because McDavid and Draisaitl have shown they can carry the team for a long time. So I'm not saying you won't have any chance, but you need to have depth to win the Stanley Cup. You can maybe squeeze by the Vancouver Canucks if you're the Edmonton Oilers, but if you play Colorado in the next round or Dallas, you need a third and fourth line to start contributing. I want to see it. And I also want to see how the Vancouver Canucks play the top line for the Edmonton Oilers. Who do you throw out against them? Is it Joshua Lindholm-Granlund? Do you go strength for strength and throw out Besser and JT Miller? Do you match up Pettersson, who was very quiet in the first round? How do you play this? Do you go strength for strength? It's going to be interesting, the chess match here between the coaches on how they match up their lines, because there's a lot of moving parts here. What would you do? Yeah. Would you match defense versus offense if you're the Vancouver Canucks? Because their defensive line, I would think, is Joshua Lindholm-Garland.
Yeah, I would think probably JT Miller's line, because he's such a great two-way center. Yeah. And he can score, but he can also shut down and play physical, and he can frustrate the heck out of you. So I don't know how effective he'll be against McDavid's line, but I think you start there and give him a chance to win that matchup.
Yeah, I don't want to disagree with you, but it just eliminates JT Miller's line as a scoring threat because they're going to be chasing the game. They're going to spend all their energy trying to chase this guy down. And we've seen teams try to lock down McDavid. It doesn't work. So why not give that task to Lindholm, free up Miller, Besser, Pius Suter to just go and score some goals? And the same goes for Hoglander, Pettersson, and Makiev. It's a job that no one can do. And I think if you have a chance to slow him down, your defense isn't going to do it. Quinn Hughes, Ronick, they can't slow him down. Soucy, Myers, and Zadorov and Cole, like good defensemen. You're not stopping McDavid. He's impossible to stop. And especially going against this team, this guy's going to pile up points. It wouldn't surprise me if he gets like a 5-point outing in game one. He's that good. It's Ken Vancouver, match him and get some goals. So I think you have to focus on scoring. If I'm Rick Tocchet, I'm putting my third line versus McDavid if I can. But we'll see how it's going to be a nice chess match. These are two good coaches. It's going to be fun to watch, and that kicks off tonight. Let's just touch on the draft lottery a little bit, Tim. Par for the course. What did you think?
Yeah, a little bit of a disappointment just because, you know, you like to see who slides up, who slides down, which fan base is excited, which one is furious and all that, especially when you get into the number one pick for a draft class like this where it's Macklin, Calabrini, and then everyone else. There's not even we don't even know who's second just because he's just so much better than everybody else is. And like Bedard last year, this is a franchise-altering, you know, number one pick. And you kind of think, like, man, San Jose is just destined and doomed to lose it. You're going to see Chicago jump up or Edmonton or Columbus, and they held on to it. So no one moved. Everyone came in exactly where they're statistically were likely to be, which I think is probably a good thing, especially for those conspiracy theorists that like to put the tinfoil hat on and say Bedman rigs it or any of those guys rig it, but they didn't. It went exactly right, and you have to be excited for San Jose where everything has gone wrong the last few years. They're starting to come out of their cap hell. All these contracts are starting to expire. They've already gotten out from underneath Hurdle and Carlson and Byrne. They got Vlasic. They got Couture. That'll just start to run out a little bit, and you can start to build for the future. And now you've got your cornerstone piece. So really exciting for them.
Yeah, I don't think San Jose's ever had a number one overall pick. I was trying to think back if they've ever had one. I know Patrick Marleau was two.
Yeah, and they got Jumbo later, but
they got Jumbo a few years later. Yeah, but I don't think they've ever had a number one guy. But yeah, I'll have to check on that. But it's huge for them. Massive. This is the team that's just been mired in cap hell for the last, I want to say, like 5-6 years, where they just haven't been able to do anything because of all the contracts that they have. Well, they've started to get out from under that. They got rid of Burns. They got rid of Carlson. They got rid of Hurdle. Still have Couture and Vlasic, but there's light at the end of the tunnel there. They have some good young players to potentially build around. So we'll see. And we said this on the Bleacher Show report. I think it's good that he's going to San Jose, this Macklin Celebrini kid. He didn't get the prep media wise that Connor Bedard got. Bedard was followed by cameras since he's been 14 years old. Celebrini hasn't had that. So it's a culture shock to go from college in Boston where you're sheltered. They're not, you know, there's not 150 people at the press pool waiting to talk to you and dissect every play you've made. There's a couple. And so he's going from just a minor thing, and now he's going to be the number one overall pick. You saw him on ESPN last night. Looked good. Looked uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, where Connor Bedard was very, you know, he was well-versed. He was, you know, chatting people up. He knew the game. This kid's still young. He's going to be 18 years old when he goes to San Jose. He'll be able to hide a little bit. Just kind of sit there and hang out. There's not a lot of – you can walk around San Jose. No one knows you're a hockey player. Like, you blend in. Can't do that in Chicago. Connor Bedard can't go anywhere without the security. So good for him. San Jose needs it. They need it. The tank will be rocking. I'm excited to see how he does in San Jose. This will jumpstart their reboot. I don't think he's the caliber of Bedard. He's close. He's close.
He's being called a generational talent, so we'll see.
Draft is generational. It's so funny how they just throw that term out so loosely. Shane Wright worked out for him.
He's pretty special.
He's very special. All right, moving on. Quick hits. Hart Trophy finalists were announced. No shocker here. McDavid, Kucherov, MacKinnon. No Matthews. Love that. Suck on that one, Matthews. They did it right. They didn't pander to the 69 goals and the Toronto fans. MacKinnon should win. That's my pick.
Yeah, I like that pick. It's between him and Kucherov for me, but it is amazing. You know, we like to dump on Matthews, but for a 69 goal scorer to not be a Hart finalist is just, it's pretty wild.
69 goals, 10 assists. Yeah. Nothing in the playoffs.
Yeah. You go, I'm sick. I can't play. Meh.
That's what you get. I have a little inside information. I know some people who vote for the awards, and they're like, McKinnon, you're going to get it.
Yeah.
They're all on board for McKinnon. All right, moving on. Rob Blake had the opportunity to buy out Pierre-Luc Dubois after the season, potentially. It's all about dates. I think Dubois has a birthday around, when is it, June something? And then the new season starts after that, and it was going to be close. You have to have 2 days before the end of the season and the start of the new season. So there was a window where they could have bought him out
June 24th.
And paid less, and they would count less against the cap. And everybody was planning for that because his new contract comes in next year, $8.5 million. He was a total albatross this year. He sucked. And Rob Blake says, no, we're going to coach him up. We want to keep this guy around. We have faith in him. So big mistake by Rob Blake, obviously. Everybody knows this guy is a team cancer. He sucks at hockey. This is going to be the one decision that Rob Blake makes that will scuttle this whole team. You're losing Kopitar. You're losing Doughty. And you're putting all your eggs in Pierre-Luc Dubois' basket. Okay, we'll see how that works out for you, Cotton. Bold, bold decision. This guy has a track record of just terrible attitude, killing coaches' careers, demanding trades, not working at all, no effort, doesn't care at all, worried about his sleeve tattoos. Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Do you think in situations like this, I mean, everyone on the team knows, right, the situation. They know the deal. And say, you know, they like the guy. Say they're not frustrated with him personally. They like him. They like hanging around him. They're glad he's on the team. Yeah. But do you think any of like the leadership has had conversations with him, like the players? Say, listen, we need more from you, or we need this or that. Or do you feel like it's just an elephant in the room that no one has to say out loud?
It's the massive elephant in the room. I don't think Kopitar goes up to him and goes, hey, man, we need you to play better. Can you please try?
It, you know?
Yeah, everybody knows it. I'm sure the coaches has talked to him a little bit and, you know, watch video and saying, this is what we want you to do. But everywhere he's gone, they've done that. They did
it
in
Winnipeg. First round matchup, but like, what is he? He makes 8.5, right? So like,
yeah, he sucks.
You put almost anyone else in that spot who's making that money, and they're such a good team, and they're a good team, then close. And they have just that big weight holding him down. It's got to be frustrating for the guys on the squad.
What's funny is trying to compare him to other teams and just going, okay, well, that guy makes $8.5 million. How would he look on our team? I always go to JT Miller because I think he's a very reasonable $8 million salary. He would look fantastic in LA. Like I'm talking, he is LA personified. He's a Dustin Brown, but super offensive. You know what I mean? Does everything right. Doesn't take no guff. Shoots it from the hip. He'd be great in that town. But no, you got Pierre-Luc Dubois, who's just a little sissy boy who doesn't try and worried about how he looks. And when the tough times get going tough, he's gone. Nowhere to be found. When the lights are the brightest, he's hiding in the locker room. But Rob Blake thinks he can coach him up. We'll see. I'll be amazed if he can do it. All right. Ottawa Senators has signed a coach. Who'd they get, Tim?
Travis Green.
Oh, is that a new name? I've never heard him before.
Yeah. He was an assistant last year. Mm. He was there for just about 4 years in Vancouver, made the playoffs once, ultimately was a big disappointment in their performance. And then he was fired at the same time that, Benning was fired or whoever their prior GM was a couple years ago. Then he was in New Jersey last year, assistant coach under Lindy Ruff. And now he's going to be the head coach for a 4-year contract in Ottawa.
Unbelievable. How does this make sense?
Yeah, the Sens fans aren't happy.
No crap. This guy, like his tenure in Vancouver was awful. Awful. Ushered in Bruce Boudreau. That was his most known for.
Like, the way I look at it is like, okay, in Ottawa, you're taking over an Ottawa team that on paper should be good. They have a lot of talent. Their core is locked up. Their core is young. They just don't have an identity. They haven't been able to make a stride. They haven't been able to take the next step. Is he the guy to do it? Look at Vancouver 4 years ago. Young core, a lot of talent, don't have an identity, can't take a step forward. And he was not even close to getting them there. So why would you think they'd come into a very similar situation in probably close to as big of a hockey market and still not be able to do it? I don't understand that. Maybe he learned. Maybe he learned what not to do last time. And he had, because you make your case, right? You have to, part of the interview process is you kind of explain where you want to, how you want to coach him, the direction you want to go, the systems you want to play. I'm sure he was very compelling, but we'll see if what happened in Vancouver taught him
how to do it. I don't even know how that process works out, because it feels like they just pick a name and go, oh, Travis, he's up. All right, Travis, we get you. Right. It's just it's bizarre. And your constant optimism for the Ottawa Senators amazes me. For as much as you are down on the Boston Bruins,
I'm not down on the Bruins.
Your optimism for these Ottawa Senators team is just always mind-boggling.
What's optimistic about what I said?
This young core ready to break through. They got a lot of great young players. It's going to be this and that. They just need someone to mold them. Nah, this team sucks. Sorry, Brady Tkachuk. It ain't work. It's a poor man's Toronto Maple Leafs.
Which is not saying much.
And not saying much. A couple good individual guys during the regular season. You know, maybe they make a run. These guys don't even make the playoffs. But when you look at their individual stats throughout the season, it's not bad. You know, Brady Tkachuk puts up 74 points, 34 goals, 34 assists. Drake Batherson had a pretty good year. They just can't do it. So your optimism is just very funny. I was there 3 years ago, but I learned. You're like a jilted lover. You just always want the best. These guys, they're not going to let me down again.
I can change them. Yeah. Just give me a chance.
No, Travis Green will change him. He's the guy to do it. I love it, Tim. Never change. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate the support. We will see you guys on Friday. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.